volta di faccio, anche se voglio, non do di stipi per forza, per forza, per forza, per faccio, per me freccia, per dire come ho avuto, uscita tra vent'anni, finita di cazzo, non vedo tra vent'anni. Containing the problem in which area the scriptural section should be built in their respective compartments. You know, there are many of them, perhaps all of you are also, know that there are students of the Department of Jewish of Russia, and still in accordance with the students of Russia, and the character of that body in accordance with the students of the Department. I want to discuss di uscita tra le gambe, quindi non è frightened. Ho risposto a un resto che ritorno a noi, in a lot of things, first, in a long time, in potenza frightened. Però è stato per le gambe, a Nicolaus, per esplendere di a lot of things, in a practical exploration beginning, which will be an extension of comprehensive thought here. I'll try to describe two basic aspects of our religious awareness, in which find expression in Shita Sabinatana. I'm not going to make any discoveries tonight. No. In general, it's known to you what I have formulated differently and the emphasis can be used. Sometimes the doctrine is the same, but the emphasis is very important.
Immediately, when you're reading the
second, from the reader's viewpoint, or from the reader's right to his left, the partials appear in the order in which they are found in the Torah, in the Exodus, and in the Deuteronomy. The reader starts with Parish, continues with Moroyot in Yaakov, looks to Moroyot, here Parish, Moroyot in Yaakov, next, Shema, and at last, Moroyot in Sharia. We follow the order of the Parishes in the Pentateuch. Shema, Parish, Moroyot in Yaakov, we find in Parishes. Day, Shema Royal Shemay and Deuteronomy, Israel, Parish Royal Jirach of Israel, yet Bar Shema, which we find in Parshat Chana, next to Shema, Bar Shema and Shemay, which we find in Parshat Eke. I repeat, according to Rashi, the parshas are placed in the four compartments of the Tfilah Shel Rosh. The order in which the Torah and the parshas are placed in the four compartments of the Tfilah Shel Rosh is identical with the order in which we find them in the Torah. Let me say again. It's from my right. Kadesh, from my left, on the right of the leader. Kadesh, first compartment, when we have a second compartment, Shema, third compartment, William Shemayat, third compartment. The Rabbi Yotam disagrees with Rashi. He argues, if Rashi's interpretation, we were correct, then the writer, the Torah of the Torah, would have said, take up Kidron, Kaddish Nikon Trey, Vohoyo Kidron Vako, Shema Vohoyo Shomea. But the writer doesn't say that. The writer expressed itself differently. Take up Kidron, Kaddish Nikon Trey, Vohoyo Kidron Vako, Miyamin, Shema Vohoyo Shomea, Mismor. We must assume, according to the Bible, that the continuity breaks up in the middle, between the second and the third compartment. You start Kadesh, Yoyot Yirako, and you stop. Then you start Shema from the other side, from the left, from the right. Shema, Yoyot Yishomer. So according to Rabbi Yotam, the order is followed. Kaddish, Voyo Kiyirako, Voyo Yishomeyal, and Shema. According to Rashi, and in the extreme right compartment is Kaddish, and the extreme left compartment is Voyo Yishomeyal. According to Rabbi Yotam, in the extreme right compartment is Kaddish, and the extreme left compartment is Shema. And what Rabbi Yotam calls Abai is the answer. The two parshas which begin to merge with the Hoyo are in the center, in the middle. The account of the Tam is Kaddish, Voyo Kiyirako, Voyo Yishomeya, Shema. Therefore, when the Tam is Tam is the Brighter, Kaddish, Lipopheya, Voyo Kiyirako, Minimim, Shema Vohoyim Shomea Mismor. You start from the extreme right or left, and then you put the place two parshas, then you start from the other extreme, with the right or left, and you place two parshas. According to Rashi,
the word cathedral is right understandable. It means cathedral in a section written way. In the way text, we will find the partial integrated into the text of the Torah, in the same order I have to take them in the compartment. But according to the Torah, we don't understand what the cathedral means. It was cathedral, it's not cathedral. It's Tadish, way of Yerako, Goyim, Shomei, Ashma. It's not cathedral. So what is cathedral? It is short evidence, let me say, that Rashi and Rabbi Natan disagreed on the basic question. How are we need to treat the fourth section, the fourth parasha, as one entity or as two entities? Do the fourth parasha belong, I would say, hypothetically, to one uniform order of thought and commitment? Let's not forget that the four parshiyot narrate, what do they narrate, the four parshiyot? There is a spirit in the four parshiyot. There is a charisma. There is a tale. The four parshiyot narrate. What is it about? In what are the parshiyot concerned? People make feel should know that. Should know that. Because still, according to the Rambam, is not only a mitzvah shriyat, a technical mitzvah, but a mitzvah shibaret. It's an experiential performance as well. It's an emotion. It's a thought. The commitment. What is the story of the four parashas that we try to track? Let's say where we are. We do listen to the story. This is the story of Kabbalah in Rosh Hashanah. Kabbalah in Rosh Hashanah. According to Rashi, all four parshiyot narrate the identical great story of Kabbalah in Rosh Hashanah. But it's one entity, it's one unit, one order. It's one entity, it's one unit, one order. Then how does the order start? Let's start with the first parsha where mitzvah kibbutz is mentioned. This is Kaddish. We finish with the second, which entails a mention of mitzvah kibbutz. Then we pick up the third one in a different group, in Deuteronomy. Again, mitzvah kibbutz is mentioned. And finish with the last parsha where mitzvah kibbutz is mentioned, the Roi Yerushalayim. There is no doubt, it's quite obvious that Rashi holds the view that we deal with one entity consisting of four compartments. Component parts, actually. Consisting of four component parts, to which the reader encounters one by one the way we find them while reading the Sefer Torah. The current order of the Cidron, according to Rashi, signifies a technical, textual arrangement. The story contained in the four sections begins with Kaddish and ends with Orient. What would you suggest about our Levant? The Rabbi Natan apparently thinks differently. He has a different view. The four parshiyot, according to him, to his view, represent two entities. Each entity embraces two sections. The sections from Exodus, Kaddish Moya and Shamea, is one unit. And the sections from Deuteronomy, from Mishneh Berot, form another unit. These two units of thought and commitment are related to two orders. One order runs from the right of the reader to his left. لماذا هذا؟ لأن the exodus extends in the opposite direction from the left of the river to and the contrary. Excuse me, I made a mistake. One order, the Deuteronomy order, runs from the right, from the left of the river to his right. The other order, the Exodus, extends in the opposite direction, from the left of the river to the, from the right of the river to his left. Each order has a separate point of departure. The term cathedral d'apprendre, Rabbi Nodam, the term cathedral d'apprendre, Rabbi Nodam, what does it signify? Not textual sequence, or order. Denotes not a textual, but a conceptual or experiential arrangement. There are two units, two stories, two commitments, two charisma, two contents. One content consists, this is the Exodus unit, consists of two portions. These two portions were placed in the proper order. Kaddish Moedi Lachon. Then there is another unit, with another faith, with another story, with another commitment. And there are options, and those parts are also placed in the proper order. But you start from the extreme compartment, from the compartment which is on the extreme left or on the extreme right. So that's why Kaddish Moedi Lachon constitutes one order, Shema Rayim Shemeach constitutes another order. The parshas extends in two opposite directions. That there is a duality of content and order and commitment in film can be corroborated by a lot of facts, namely, we could suggest it. Rashi seems that the order of the four parshas is a uniform, identical order. Identical. It's the same story. There is continuity, complete continuity, from Kaddish to Roya in Shomer. According to the time, there are two orders. Two ideas are represented by the four sections. The Exodus unit represents one idea, the Deuteronomy unit represents another idea. Yes, or it's not like it. Of course, I can't remember some of the Shinnim, wait for the Shinnim. I believe there is a higher in support of the opinion of Rabbi Nodam. So the whole lecture will be completely devoted to this problem. What are the two units of Rabbi Nodam? What are the two stories that still will tell us? Very important, not only from the philosophical viewpoint, from the viewpoint of Ashkotet, but simply for the kiyum, for the fulfillment of mitzvah still. Because still, in order to be mitzvah still, requires not only a physical performance, but an experience, an experiential and internal performance as well. You cannot experience the mitzvah if you don't know the content of the mitzvah. So to interpret the two units as a religion in the proper region is of great relevance to us. I say that the Tam's opinion was that the four parshas are classified as grouped into two units, into two entities. Each entity represents a separate idea. And I say there is support for the Tam in another halacha. Or rather, we say a Kabbalah. So what does Yom say? Correct. The Gemara says, Shin shall sing a local initiative. These are local initiatives tonight. And Shin shall wash, the Shin should be engraved or carved. The Shemusha Rabbi, is actually, it's not a paper, it's a document consisting of to see a lot of decisions by the game, but they get to see. They say, not to mention the Dhamma Paramesha Nityananda, but Tushya. Tushya. The Shemusha Rabbe requires Tushya instead of one. The Vanda Talmud mentions only Ramshi, Shinshal Pillar, the Shemusha Rabbe speaks, and added another one and speaks of two. As a matter of fact, the Shinan differ. There is one Shinan on our right, and there is one Shinan on our left. They differ in what they got. One Shin consists of four heads, and another Shin of three heads. What do the two Shinan represent? What do they bear witness? What step did they bear witness? That to the duality of order and eidetic content of the world. That there have been a time amplified so much. In order to understand our Madam, the proper reason, to formulate his ideas in a practical category for the experiential time, I would suggest that we should put our little Tom's opinion for one aside, for one, for a short while, and instead pick up a passage in Midrash Rabbah, in Shmeis Rabbah, related to the verse, Zeis Hukasa Pesa, Koen Belecho, Mezeis Aleichem. I'll read it in Hebrew, I have the translation, and then our whole lecture will just revolve about the interpretation of that passage in the Midrash. Midrash starts as follows. Yehi libi tomim b'chutecha, l'mal le'evish. Zechu kasa pesa. I'll read it in Hebrew first. Chutecha means two. Means two chupas. What two chupas did David have in mind when he said, Yehi libi tomim b'chutecha, let my heart be undivided to obtain your statues? What statues did he refer to? So the Midrash says, Zechutas hafesa, Zechutas kol adma. Lomo, Shesteyem deinim zelotes. Bozeh ne'emar chukas hafesa, ubozeh ne'emro chukas hafero. Zeina to yideya eze chupo gdeilu mizu. Moshe ulishnei matunis, I'll translate it. Deine, so im Auge stehen, mit dem Amizu, Eiso Shechar Oto, Melave Eiso, Abbeiso, Eilechet Nachareo, mit dem Amizu, Tach Nema Bepesach, Chuso, und die Toro Nema Chuso, mit dem Amizu, Sheikh Lepesach Tzrichi Lo, שנאמר ולא כולה קודם מהפר שני פסחת let us start with the Midrash let my heart be undivided it's very important the word for me in thy statutes in order that I may not be put to shame in other words I told the boys to bring them inflation or the spread from the tickets. Didn't that be on the tickets? Yeah. Oh. David referred to two statues. Chukechot. Did you read it from the Chukechot? Two statues. Chukechot, two. The statue of Pesach and the statue of Korah Adumo. The rest of it said was the same the red letter I decided. No, it's not perhaps for that. It just distorts the start of the universe. Which are similar to one another. For in reference to the first, it says, this is the statue of the person. In the reference to the other, it says, this is the statue of the wall, the Skokasatero. Moreover, one does not know which statue is greater than the other. It measures greater than the statue. It is like the case of two ladies, noble ladies, who were walking side by side, together, apparently, on the footing of equality. Who then is the greater? She whom her friend accompanies to her house, and so is really following her. Similarly, in the case of the personer, we find the term statue, Hukasapeta. And in the case of the red heifer, we also come across the word statue. In which then is the greater? The red heifer, the foreigner. For those who eat the personer, I mean the who participate share in the foreign person, in the first foreign, we eat purifying Hashem. As it is said, for the unclean, they shall take of the ashes of the burning of the fire. And in Hebrew, Risa Shechavato, Lewabe Yisrael Beso, Lelechet Achareo, Kach Lema Betesach, Chuko, Vetu Beporo Lema Chuko, Migdelo, Apo, Sheikh Lepesach Trichino, Shelema Lokku Lakomei, Leachar Shreifa Tachato. You understand it? I know it. Let us first understand the Midrash verbatim. The Hukasatero, and this is last Shabbat, yesterday, we read Parashat Korach.
Escort, waiting, and
put at Apollo is the mistress of all the nobles. What is difficult here is that talking in terms of sequence, of temporal sequence, is correct. But analyzing the situation in a logic, conceptual terms, is the reverse, is true. Why is the reverse true? Because why do you attempt to decrease things with Mechatus? For what purpose? The cleansing with the Mechatus is not a Mechatus in itself. It's not a mixture per se, an independent mixture. It's in order to qualify the person for another performance, namely the sharing in the form Pesach. So of course, conceptually, this Pesach should be considered the mistress, the leading lady, and the noble lady, the queen, and the Mechatus, the attendant, the escort. Because teleologically, my concern with Mechatus is due to what? To the mitzvah step. But anyway, I cannot argue with the Medrash. Now this is the useless. This is the way the Medrash says. The Medrash interprets it in terms of sequence in time. The sequence in time is the plural always comes first and the form better. Yes. But let us understand. Let us understand. But this is not important, of course. What's important to understand the problem in Medrash? Meet the other group. Who is the greater one? Who is more outstanding? Who is more important? Who is more significant? What part of the Medrash? There was a philosophical problem, apparently, which the Medrash wanted to resolve. It's typical of the times in which the Midrash was written and edited. And perhaps it's also important to our time. The semantics, and I'm going to tell you something which you all know, but as I told you in the beginning, I'll formulate it differently, and I'll place the emphasis of my idea. But the thought itself is very old, and is known to you. The semantics of the term Kuporot is according to our tradition, the Torah Shemotet tradition. It appeared the first time, the interpretation of Kuporot in the manner in which I'm going to explain, in the scheme, quoted by Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Kuporot, and by Maimonides in the last aloha, last aloha Kuporot in the Yurek, is the semantics of Kuporot in accordance with the tradition. Initiated by Santer Skin, voted by all the Shinra, is the following. Kupo refers, Rashi says the following, yes. Rashi says the following at the beginning of Kupo, and there is almost an I. And the same one which is used by the Rambam. Kupo refers to precept which the Satan and our enemies scoff at the ridicule, saying, what is this command? And what is the reason for it? Shasotan the Unisarim of the Shivim, on this account, because of that, the scripture uses the term Kupor. The term Kupor, this Kupor Patero, implying it is a law ordained by me, the capital. And you have no right to examine or to criticize it. Lochem Rishus Lehare Rasheh. Consequently, so what is Chukor? Chukor is related to the absolute norm, or to the ultimate in time. Now let me see. What we understand under an absolute norm, or an ultimate in time, what do you understand by it? I believe that we understand under the terms
super, absolute mind, ultimate intelligence, we understand two things. One, unalterability and universality. The validity of the Hupa, of the absolute norm, is independent of situational factors. You know, we speak now of a situational entity or that. Whether it takes the process of life, we know. The Hupa is completely independent of situational factors. Be the factor, be they. Political, economic, B-day, sociological, cultural. The Hupa is independent of them. The transient mood of society, or the volatile intellectual climate, and the fluid value structure, all of those factors have no bearing upon the Hupa. The Hupa persists, survives. The latter is valid in all circumstances, always and everywhere. This is a description of the term Hupa, if Hupa is to be equated with the absolute level, and that it has been invited by the Hupa with the absolute level. It means, what is the first trait of that Hupa? What is the first characteristic of that Hupa? What is it? And unalterability and universality. And I believe that certain words of feeling would describe what universality means, what unalterability means. David says, "Oh, my ego is my good support. We only need to make our breath. In this action, I am so much of ויציע שיר, הנה. מין אשר I go from thy spirit. And I would add one word, and from thy Hupa. But with it shall I flee from thee and thy law. If I ascend up into heaven, and I land on a distant star, millions and billions of miles away, thou art there, and so is your command. If I make my bed in the bottomless depths, thou art there, and so is thy prison. It is impossible to flee from God, it's also impossible to flee from war. The law catches it. One tries to flee, but that. The law to do my enemy. It can't. The Jaina knows it. The theological reason for this equation, which can be traced to Chazal, to Tereskei, the theological reason for this equation by our rabbi, as Hupa and absolute norm, is, in my opinion, the following. Chokek, in Hebrew, the verb chokek, the verb, signifies what? Carving, or engraving, or forming by incision, figures or letters on a hard, tough surface, such as metal or stone. Hey, now, kapayim chakeshe. Kapayim doesn't mean an hour. Our hands are soft, not our soft. It means that the hands are mighty, and they're pretty hard. Hey, now, kapayim chakeshe. I have great empty upon the palms of my head.
Chaykiki Basela Nishkole. The greatest rehabilitation for thyself, in the rock.
Over the Pasuk in Iyeh, the Mijitain Vyekos from Milai Beit Barzel, the Yeseret Lohav, Bitsu Yechot Zeyvon. Oh, that my words were now written, they were greater in rock, and the most important is this word, forever. What does it mean? A script by incision upon a hard surface is relatively strong, protected against the destructive harm end of time. It persists, it lasts long time, millennia. Chokak means allegorically to engage in legislation, permanently binding legislation of uninterrupted validity. Job says, what it's you will get to say. They should be engraved in the rock forever. So the word chokak is to be understood forever. Not just if one deals with a ancient script, they will not use the term chokak. You will see that you use the term chokak. Chokak means permanently. Permanently is symbolic of what? As permanent law. Unchangeable, unalterable. The Aseret HaDibrot, the Decalogue was engraved on two tablets of stone. Why? Did you happen to go find some light on your opinion? Why did he charge Moshe with the mission of climbing the mount and carrying two heavy tablets of stone? What did the Luchot represent? The idea of stability and permanence. It's quite interesting. Once Moses was confronted with the trinity, wild pagan dance around the golden calf, he smashed the Luchot. He broke the Luchot. Again, why? For the following reason. The people forgot the first commandment. I am thy God within 40 days. So what is the use of presenting them with this commandment graven on stone, engraven on stone? Since they lack the basic trait of a Jew, namely loyalty and mission. Therefore, the term chen for hukah, it's the same, whether it's a masculine or a feminine, is related not only to the moral law, but to the natural law as well. The Bible identifies the natural law with the moral law by calling both orders, the moral order and the natural order, hukah. Well, that's possible. You remember that possible? Yes, correct. Oh, for instance, the Sumei Layom Kukai, who when he gave to the sea its decree, the father in Israel, who the Kukai made the earth, when he appointed the foundations of the earth. The reason for this equation, namely, the moral law is called Kukah, and the natural law is called Kukah, is, in my opinion, a twofold. One. First, and this is it's a simple thought, it is in my mind, certainly, in my Norwegian philosophy, but I believe it goes back to the, it can be traced back to the Talmud, and I believe even we'll find it in Kayash. Nature functions in accord with the cosmic moral law. Nature as such is a moral being. Nature, I mean, in the universe, the cosmos as such, is a moral being. Whether that is not a good thing in accord, I believe I'm not going to make a mistake, 72nd chapter in the first volume of the Mary Woodhill, when the Rambam declares the whole cosmos as macroanthropos, as a big, great man, as individuality, as a personality. This is supported by the Chazal's parent, Tzar Leilom, the ruler of the world, the world itself. Across my mind, this spoke in terms of panpsychism, that the world as a whole, as a totality, is a living being, not a living being, but a mobile being. And the world cavitation, according to my mind, as we understand it, there's something technical in there, which is reduced to mathematical equation. According to my mind, the law of foundation, there is a moral law as far as the cosmos is concerned, the universe. We don't understand the transition, the transition. Well, more displayed, Moses, when my mind is said in the Buddha, Moses wanted to understand the transition from the cosmic world into the moral world, or vice versa, the transition from the moral world into the cosmic world. The law, the natural law which was imposed upon the universe by the Maker at creation is a moral law at the same time. That moral law is implemented by the fall of the stone, by the rising of the tide, and by the explosion of a distant star somewhere on the outskirts of the cosmos. It's not only an attendance of fire, it's the normal fulfillment of the mind. Would you throw the process to support your mind? Is it new to you then? Would you call it surprise? With the old Hebrew expressions and the Hebrew scholars and later by the philosophers in Italy at the Renaissance, the cosmos is a macroanthropos, and in the conference, and this man is a little cosmos, then it goes there. This view can be traced just to Maimonides and to Chazal. And my opinion to the Kumash itself. The Yahweh is in the Spor Asher also, the Vinitays in the Aid. The new Vinitays. The Vinitays. Faith is an adjective which is applied to moral action, not to technical action. The Yahweh is in the Spor Asher also, the whole cosmic structure, the cosmic order, is a moral order at the same time. That's why faith is applicable to the moral law, and is also applicable to gravitation or to any other physical law. According to my manager, the book of physics is the product morality for the stone, and for the electrical current, and for the magnetic field. Then it is superfluous to say that nature is never violent in that law. And that's why we see many times, as pointed out, the soil, the stability which prevails in nature, and the musicality which prevails among the people. The second reason why the natural law was termed Chok is that because the natural law is unalterable, There are no exceptions, no surprises. The natural law is reliable, predictable, and universal. The Lord prevailing here, the night that he has, the careless event, and the distant star. That's why the faith, the word faith, is applicable to the moral and the natural, because both are unalterable and universal. This one of the things they say, I understand by the words of the caring people, by the caring natural world, means unalterability and universal. This is a then and where. Now there is a second thing which I understand, which comes under the caring people. In absolute norm. And as a matter of fact, you should tell me there. What is it? What do you understand by this? What do you understand by this? We all know people in the English is Rabbi Raphael. What do you understand by it? I said one aspect I explained. The steady, stable character of the world. The changes in society have no value. But this is not exactly what is understood at the popular level by people. What's understood by people at the popular level? I beg your pardon? What? I'm explaining, all right? Yes. But I know I didn't hear. The second thing I understand is the total that the absolute world requires total commitment. And total commitment entails a strange paradoxical act of surrender or suspension. If I may use to picture the garden phrase, but he didn't use it in this connection. Suspension of the logos, of the human logos, of the universe. The commitment to the super is total. And if it is total, it is unintelligent. I'll give you an example, you know what? The commitment of a son to a father, or a daughter to a mother, is not a total one. It is more about, it depends upon many circumstances. The commitment of a parent to a child is almost total. The commitment of a parent to a child is the most unintelligible commitment. And the commitment which Almighty requires of us to ensure it should be total. And total means unintelligible. I commit myself to a rock, a law, even though this law has been vetoed many times by my lips. The cause that motivated the legislator to prevent the people to comply with such a law is a mystery. What the Pope demands from us, basically, what does the Pope demand from us? And let's not forget that we are rational beings. So what does the Pope demand from us, from a rational being? What does he demand? To be non-rational and to act arbitrarily. This is at least an internal practice. Except what? Be unreasonable. Don't act like a rational being. A rational being will always console his reason. Will always console the lover. Don't console. Accept. Surrender. Suspend. And neither love is makes trouble suspend. something I said just a short while ago. I said there that Hooper and Max Lucroin has two characteristic traits. The one is unalterability, the second one now paradoxality. Basically, there are not two traits, it's one trait, namely what trait is. What is it? Paradoxality. Namely the surrender to the paradoxical and enigmatic, which the total commitment entails. As a matter of fact, that's the reason why the total, why the thought is unalterable, because it is unintelligible. Since the thought belongs into a non-cognitive dimension, it is not subject to change. Only worlds motivated by the intellect are vulnerable to modification and correction, or even interpretation. If a world is motivated by the intellect, the intellect likes, the intellect in general, likes to build and tear down, to create and destroy. And what is history of science if not a story of uninterrupted construction and destruction? Affirmation and negation. The thought being a unique entity, free from the municipality of the motivational apparatus in man, can afford to be steady and persistent. In this juncture, we are faced with a very serious problem of human personalism, which plays a great prominent role in today's thought. Because the idea that men are creators, is the image of God in human beings, and the idea that men is an individuality, a spiritual personality that gives to the world by the Jews, in light of our definition, the problem of human personalism arises. Man, tells us the Bible, was created in God's image. In other words, God dwells in man, or abides in him. And the divine presence manifests itself in his world through the singularity and otherness of man. In his being different from the entire cosmos, being different. To be human means to be different. I don't mean from a place of wrong, I mean to be different, to be existentially different, different from the animal, different from the beast, different from the senate, different from the planet. That means to be human. What is singular? What is singular? Let me ask you. What is singular in man? Or shall I substitute human for singular? What is human in man? What is the humanitas in man? What is it? It's hairdo. What reflects the divine presence is within man, and what reflects dignity of man, which is a result of divine presence in man? Of course, the usual answer given is well known. As a matter of fact, my mother is singularity of man is, you know, indigestible in love. This beloved, which abides in all, with the cognitive capacity of man. Man is capable to know, to acquire knowledge,
the animal is incapable of applying knowledge. Whatever the reason be, but it's a basic difference. It's this, and this was accepted by man. For instance, when we were in the medieval philosophy, classifying the universe in the four categories, minerals, semen, plants, semea, sky, and then it comes to the end, they'll use the term metabole. The speech, what does speech express? Human thought, it means his rational ability. For his cognitive, neuretic capacity to think, as my mind has expressed himself, to think along abstract conceptual lines, to think in concept. And it's very strange that my mother is dead hundreds of years ago. The science will speak in concept. I will speak about mathematics. But this is the discipline which affects this concept. It is abstraction, nothing else. That was the answer which was given by my mind. I mean, I want to be in trouble with my mind. But not important enough. If this situation were true, that humanitas, singularity equals humanitas, humanitas equals cognitive capacity in man. If this were true, then man's commitment to precepts, whose rationale, the motive, and whose significance he fails to grasp, would contradict his very dignity. How can man surrender his dignity, which is identical with his singularity, with his humanitas, by committing himself to a world which his own mother has bitterly rejected? God would have never tolerated an answer such as Nasir Nishma, means total commitment, his identity as man would exhaust itself in his cognitive conceptual capacity. God would have never demanded from man to act non-rationally, since to act non-rationally means to act in a manner which is not human. And God himself created man to be human. Hence we move after good, that the highest endowment in man, which manifests the latter humanity and imago Dei, is not the logos, what we call logos. Not reason, what we call reason. But the sovereign will, the sovereign will, our country, the, let me say him, the rationality, which is above and beyond man's intellectual selfhood. And apparently, the good, what I'll explain to you, I don't want to repeat. This is the central axis of my election. This mysterious will, this sovereign will, this will which is free. When my mind speaks about freedom of will, it doesn't mean the pragmatic will, but that the sovereign will, which is free to make decisions without consulting the lover. In a word, in the center of the spiritual personality, the sovereign, pure will abides, not the proud, pragmatic intellect. The human center is to be understood in voluntaristic categories, not in rationalistic categories. I am man because I will, not man. Understand is very important, but it's necessary. Because I will, I have the capacity to will. And I can influence my will. That's what makes me mad. Not always, this is a matter of experience, not always does man, allegedly a rational being, act intelligently. Sometimes he acts unintelligently. And everybody knows that experience, such experience. If, of course, intelligibility be interpreted the utilitarian, mercantile, pragmatic term. As a matter of fact, the most basic decisions in man's life are made spontaneously, suddenly, within a split second, in response to what we don't know exactly. To an aboriginal command which comes from within, not from without, but from within. To an intuition which goes on like a light on a sub-horizon in a grid-driven light. Somehow, I can't figure it out, I can't understand it, I can't explain it, I cannot even explain it to myself, but I'm determined to do so. For some light on the far horizon is giving me direction and guidance. And this will, this intuitive will, defies stubbornly all attempts at rationalization or conceptualization. Decisions, for instance, pertaining to marriage, but now it is beyond that. Decisions pertaining to law, following the law, or profession, choosing a profession, those are basic decisions. Choosing a profession, or selection of men, those are basic decisions. Or a major financial problem, and they have to do it all. Or military plans, or state affairs. All those decisions are reached intuitively, without addressing oneself, and without addressing an inquiry, without addressing any inquiry to the intellect. Later the intellect comes and tries to explain. But he is what he told me. Was he Johnny come late? He said that the intellect is Johnny come late. There is will. It's impossible to know that. Second or third great decisions are reached after a long, long consultation with the intellect. And they're always wrong. The intellect is sedate is sedate, slow, calculated. The intellect sees things in terms of loss and profit. To decide for the intellect means to figure out. Or to compare many alternatives. To foresee results. And this takes a long time. The will, the dynamic, the subtle, passionate, aggressive, and moves with dizzying speed. The will does not choose between two alternatives, or many alternatives. It does not choose at all. There is only one possibility. Either I accept this possibility, there is no substitute. That's why his decisions are radical in nature by nature. And very decisive. Sometimes they may revolutionize and change one's life. This sovereign will is not irrational. It's not irrational. You need the rest of me. The sovereign will is to guide the man above. About his intelligence, about the intellect, about the woman, about the moon. This will inspire and in many cases points out the path leading to deeper understanding and more exalted knowledge. The will, as I said before, blazes and illuminates the path for the logos to follow, to come, and to understand at higher levels. Without this sudden will, great minds would have never made the discovery which revolutionized science. I don't believe that the law of gravitation is useful, but it's a story, not to tell. Right, all right, it's a story, it's a nice story. What is it? Someone I, it's solid, What does it mean? The greatest discovery comes in the street. Because the intellect is not so much involved as the will is. So it is a dynamic step that moves on the top of the dizzying speed. The greatest discovery were made by the sovereign will, not by the slow intellect. Slow intellect is a goal. In the Kabbalistic, Hasidic lingo. Don't laugh. This is perhaps the center of Siddhis Chabad, I don't know. But it's not limited to Chabad. It's the prime detail in the what century? 16th century New Akamari. The Kabbalistic Hasidic lingo, in this lingo, the sovereign will that reigns supreme is called what's in heaven. The latter is above thought, is above thought and cognitive analysis. It motivates the intellect, but is never motivated by the intellect. It wills because it does will. Not because it wants to get something outside of will. It wills because it does will. There is no need for an explanation. Why the sovereign wills. The mystics frequently employ the phrase, the Shoholo Birtenia Pashit. When the pure sovereign will, I'm speaking now about the divine will, that the world emerged The realization of the will is the final goal, the ultimate end. Nothing else outside of the will matters. It's an unmotivated will. It's a will which motivates others, but itself is will. This Rotzenerion, according to the Kabbalists, flows from Ketherion to the highest spirit. The crown resting on the head. If the crown rests on the head, so the crown is above Chochmah Binah, knowledge. Because Chochmah Binah Das are centered in the cerebrum, in the brain. And if I take the Kether and I put it on my skull, that means the Kether tower of a Chochmah Binah, of a knowledge. Then what is the Kether? It's nothing. It's not the pure sovereign will. Which will? Because there is no need for any motivation. Of course, that's why the mystic spoke of two beings, of two wills, of the Rotzenerion, which flows from Kether, and the Rotzenatapton, which flows from Chochmah Binah Das. The first one is an unmotivated will, the second one is a motivated will, like Chochmah Binah Das. Of course, the two wills, the Shtei Rechenis, merge into one absolute unity in the Almighty. The two opposites find their reconciliation in it. That's why they call it Retzene Akosha. There is no conflict as far as the Almighty is concerned. However, as regards man, the Almighty has granted him the Retzene Adachton as well as the Retzene Elyon. Of course, the intelligible, motivated will, and the unintelligible, unmotivated will. And in man, the two wills, quite often, are in conflict, clash, they collide with each other. It depends upon man. If he wants to identify himself with the what's in attachment, with the lower will, the motivated will, then his existential experience will be utilitarian, pragmatic, practical. However, if he wants to be, if he is out for greatness, so he has to identify himself with the supreme will, with the sovereign will, which does not move, which does not reach out for any problem, for any business, for any profit. He decides because he decides. It will because it will. The realization of the will is the ultimate end. Do you have time? Because otherwise I'll keep them on. As a matter of fact, the split man between what's in alien, the sovereign will, and the pragmatic will, is not just a Kabbalistic theory. In my opinion, the doctrine found its echo in our work. Take, for instance, an institution, a Lavic institution, such as a smarte. What does a smarte mean? What does a smarte mean? A smarte means overcoming. Oh, and this overconfidence invalidates any transaction which had my consent to approve. I was not forced, I was not constrained to do so.
there was no mistake, there was no error, but there was an element of some confidence, but and in his ability and skill. This element of overconfidence invalidates an agreement, a contract. We check that person. I agreed, for instance, to play cards for high stakes. I played, and of course, lost. Right? Well, never mind, let's forget about the underworld. The underworld collects. The world does not collect. Why? Why should the agreement pertaining to my indebtedness to the winner not be enforced? Why shouldn't they allow to enforce the agreement? There was no coercion. There were no errors. No misinformation. What was wrong? What was wrong, that's not the mechanism. What was wrong? Huh? When you say you didn't want to lose, this is no excuse. this is not even mitigating circumstances. What is wrong? Let me give you another example, Mathis Master. We have an institution at Torah Sedoret. Correct? Dissolution of law. The question I took upon, I vowed upon myself. My mind was clear. I knew what I was doing. And I wanted only to obligate myself to observe the vow. But again, I could not foresee circumstances. And I took upon myself the vow, and I took the vow upon myself. And later I realized that the fulfillment of the vow will be a hardship to me. So I come before a prophet or a person, and I ask for the solution of the matter. And then asks me, have you known that such and such circumstances will prevail? You would have never taken the vow, And so forth, so on, the four questions, few questions and answers, and the vow is dissolved. What right does the rabbinic court have to dissolve the vow, which was taken by a free man? We have a clear understanding of the situation. He was anxious to serve and to fulfill the vow, but later development made it either impossible or hard for him to fulfill the vow. Why is this solution practically or absolution for it? What kind of an institution is that Torah Sedoret? Chazal say a Torah Sedoret Perchim Perchim Ba'avir. There's no foundation, nevertheless. We practice it. What did I hear, my lord? The same is about that master. I agree that he may concern himself with the agreement into which both parties entered and the conditions were met. No cheating, I mean, I'm not speaking about Las Vegas, but I'm speaking about honest play, gambling. No cheating, and still, it's a smart mechanic. Then I'll give you a third case. The third case is Shubit, the temperance. Shubit is possible, desirable. Because, what? Well, I think I made a mistake. If they are there, I committed a mistake in the state of ignorance, I understand. But if I committed a sin, I committed a crime, not because of ignorance, not because I was never, there was never a judgment on my part, but simply I wanted to kill, I wanted to steal, I wanted to rob. And yet, if he is sincere in his, if he has a contrite heart, and is sincere in his penitential feeling, he may appear before the Almighty, and Almighty will grant him atonement. And what is this atonement being? I shake it all over to the other Mishpat Maida, the criminal deserve such consideration. But in the three institutions, as Martin, as Torah Sedoret, and Shuler, what is the explanation? Is a common explanation for all of them. What is the explanation? You should say. Because the real lie
real life, the real personality, the center of the personality, was not involved in either of those collections. The sovereign will did not possess the acute, the pragmatic will, which figures out which the decision is based upon motives of profit and loss. This will told me to sign the agreement, to gamble, to don't make a lot of money. But the sovereign will purify. So the central personality of man was not involved either in the smart transaction or in the nether or in sin. Because you have to understand that the real identity of man is hidden, sometimes unknown to himself. The real genuine I did not participate in the algae. It remained apart and beyond the pragmatic man who rebelled against his maker. Who is it? Who is the real I? The sovereign will. He has to make some mistakes because he doesn't figure out his decisions in terms of practical law. Now, the whole Torah is a long story. And our commitment to her is total in both respects, in the respect of your unalterability of the Torah. The Jew who governs says every morning, among other articles of faith, an imam in the Shlomo, I believe, should they say table on the same of blessing, that this Torah will not be replaced by any other Torah or philosophy or something. Means proclaim solemnly every morning the unalterability and the persistence of the Torah. Correct? And then the Jew, basically the good Jew, or the scholarly Jew, has never asked the why question, but a number of questions which a person may ask. Basically, there are three questions. One question is why, which the physics ask. Another question is how, which science asks. And the third question is what, which the religious person asks. One over the years. When you never ask the question, why? Why Krishna? Why Sila? Why Kashmir? Why Tarasamish Boko? Why Shah? We never ask this question. We have never asked this question why, even in face of disaster. When we were confronted with evil and distress, we never raised the question why. One person did raise the question of why. You're saying he got no answer. But he was told not to ask this question. And instead ask the question of what? This was joking. The Jew has never asked questions of why. With regard to the law, he never asked a question of why with regard to his destiny. He was heroic. The great hero never asks why. The lazy man. The coward always asks the question why. Why this, why that, why am I under obligation? This is the question of the pragmatic view. But this is not a question of the sovereign. We've never said let's find out what motivated a particular piece of religious legislation. With regard also the Torah to us, we did not request to be shown the temple. We did not ask for a demonstration. The way which the signs of Esau, Ishmael's loss, the merits, our immediate response, conveyed to the Almighty, was one at the top of the meter, namely, there was no better expression than this response which the Jews gave to the Almighty, and the Torah of the Gospel, not the minister. Why is it top of the meter? Why does this answer, consisting of two simple words, express the philosophical idea that we have explained before, public immigration, as to analogy, and as to paradoxology? We accept everything forever, and everywhere. Nashe will decide, the Mishnah will understand. Decision is prior to everything, coming to understand. This is exactly what the sovereign will require to decide, means to act, and then to decide. Don't make any mistake, I'm not recommending obscurantism. There are thoughts, if we have to, what do you do? But first, the decision is reached, then the intellect intervenes. I think that the sovereign will have decided. Our acceptance suspended the authority of the law. That's why Chazal, our rabbi, attributed so much significance to the phrase of Master Mishnah. Chazal thought that Master Mishnah was almost one of the reasons that every Jew, that the Almighty has bestowed upon every Jew, the two crowns upon every Jew, one crown corresponding to Master. The Nasir, the separate crown corresponding to Mishnah, the crown of the sovereign will, the crown of the Lumintas, the high one of the supreme Lumintas, and the crown of the question is only, is related to all to the order, to the secret. What comes first? Decision or knowledge? The Abbot has only been saved. Decision comes first, then. This is the secret, the mystery.